KFUO Radio is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for that great hour with Pastor John Lukomsky as we went through Exodus chapter 30. Now, here's how it goes. Basic ground rules. We're always picking up new listeners, so we cover this from time and again. Anything goes. Well, reasonably anything goes. If you didn't get a chance to get in about Exodus 30, you can certainly do that. Something in the news, something that's been bothering you since way back in the day when you were sitting in catechism class and you said, golly, this just doesn't make any sense. This is the opportunity to call and ask those questions. And joining us this morning is David Peter, who is a professor here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. Good morning.
Good morning, Roland.
Refresh my memory. You teach what here at the seminary?
Oh, I teach all kinds of things. I just had to put in a report here recently, and I noted that I've taught 18 different courses.
18?
At the seminary.
Well, you fall into which part of the academy here? You're exegetical, or what
yeah,
type of theology
I'm
do you teach?
I'm in the practical department.
Practical department.
Not the impractical department, no.
And what makes theology practical as opposed to exegetical or one of those other
yeah.
things?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the meaning here is that we seek to teach our students how to put theology into practice in the practices primarily of preaching, teaching, pastoral care, counseling, and leadership, management, those kinds of things. And so the courses that I primarily teach are those in pastoral leadership, church administration, preaching, so forth.
The like cool that. Side of ministry.
Well, yeah, yeah, it's great because that's where ministry gets done
Well, you know, and that's what can ruin a congregation, too, if that's done poorly.
Oh, sure, right, yeah. You can have an excellent theologian, but he just doesn't know how to put it into practice, and not much gets done that way.
Now, I've got a couple of different things. So you see, I have brought out the official folder of the Ask the Pastor program, where I collect questions that come in from the listeners.
Great.
And earlier this week, our friend John, and John, if you're listening, feel free to call in if I don't get the question right. But John has called and has some family members that are Jehovah's Witnesses.
Mm.
And quite often this discussion comes up that Jesus never claimed to be God. And I thought we might run through some of that at first, maybe help John out a little bit. But feel free to interrupt us if you have a different question or a different topic, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and KFUO at KFUO.org. So what did Jesus directly say about his divinity?
Well, for example, I believe it's in John 8, he said, I and the Father are one. And Jewish leaders took up stones to stone him. I think they understood what he was saying there.
Well, now, does that take a little bit of association? Because if you don't understand when the Jewish leaders would pick up stones to stone someone, mm-hmm. then you can say, well, I and the Father are of one mind, of mm-hmm. one purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, of one initiative.
Yes. Well, the context is much more than that, though. The context makes it very clear that he is of one essence with the Father, and you know that all by itself may not cause someone to understand it that way. But this was all cumulative. And, I mean, there are so many places where Jesus makes these claims. He uses, in a sense, the divine name for himself, the I Am. That's all through
Jehovah,
the book of
Yahweh.
Yes, the book of John. He's always claiming that title, that name for himself.
And when he does that, how do people react? Not
well. Well, that's exactly right, right. Eventually, what gets him on the cross, okay, is the charge of blasphemy that he makes himself out to be God. And that's what gets him on the cross. So it's a pretty scurrilous attempt to claim that Jesus never claimed to be God. If that's the case, I'm sure he could have clarified that with those who accused him of blasphemy, of making himself to be God and putting him on the cross as a result.
Is that words lost a bit in the translations that we have, that the accusation being he never said the words, I am God? But in Hebrew, he does.
Well, yes, in claiming the divine name, he does. And in claiming the union with the Father, he is making that claim. And essentially, when he stands before Caiaphas, the high priest, in his trial before the Sanhedrin, and the high priest says to him, "Are you the Christ, the Son of the living God?" And Jesus responds, "I am, and you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Father coming in the clouds of glory." That is a claim to be the divinity, the deity, going back to Daniel chapter 7 and that reference to this, the divine being.
And up to that point, Jesus teaches us essentially in parables. Mm-hmm. So it's you can understand why a lot of people probably don't see the direct use of or direct claim.
Right, right.
To the Trinity, yeah. You know.
Right, right, yeah.
Because, Mom, go ahead.
Yeah, and of course, then you that's in the Gospels, and there's so much cumulative evidence there. But for example, in John's Gospel, John chapter 1, beginning with verse 1, he says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And then later he says, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have beheld his glory, the glory as of the only one from the Father, the only begotten Son." And so the Son is God. That's the point there that's being made.
And what happens when Jesus is represented as being less than? Either a created being elevated, or somehow maybe like the filioque conflict with our Orthodox friends, where it's not, you know, there's a little bit of a distinction there about who proceeds from who in the order of things. What happens if you get the divinity wrong?
Well, you get everything wrong, okay? Because God, in the person of Jesus Christ, is the one who has come to substitute for all of humanity. And if he is just one man, I mean, this is just one point of it all, but if he was just a human being, and maybe even Superman, okay, maybe even a sinless human being, but if he's only a human being, then he can substitute only for one other human being, okay? $1 for $1,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
That's the value. But as true God, he is worth the whole lot of us. And so his substitutionary work qualifies for all of humanity, because he, as true God, can substitute for all humanity.
So
that's just one point, but
yeah.
But I mean, that's the core of the gospel, is the substitutionary atonement. And so if he's not God, then you have no full substitutionary atonement for the sins of the world.
From the time the tabernacle is established with all of the burnt offerings, so the time that Christ arrives at his advent in his earthly ministry, mm-hmm. we can't number the number of animals and the gallons of blood that was spilled, you know, in these sacrifices. But yet, the one perfect sacrifice is greater than all those hundreds of years of animals and blood and grain offering and all the rest?
Right, right. And that's a main point of the book of Hebrews as well, because Hebrews is one of the strongest books of the Bible that affirms Jesus' divinity, his deity. And that's another response I'd make to the Jehovah's Witnesses. You just can't take the Gospels. You also have to take what the rest of the Bible, what the epistles and so forth have to say. And the epistles are very clear. Jesus is God. Paul says all the fullness of deity dwells in him. All the fullness of deity dwells in Christ, okay? But then the Hebrews also makes it very clear that Jesus is divine, he is deity, far above the angels, but as such, then, he is able to be the perfect sacrifice and the perfect priest, and the ultimate sacrifice, and the one that is, as Hebrews 9 puts it, once and for all. Okay, you don't need any more sacrifice. No more animals are needed.
Was there ever a time after the ascension where this was not a point of controversy among Christians?
About Jesus' deity?
Deity.
Okay.
Because it seems like, you know, as soon as the disciples dispersed from the ascension, problems seemed to spring up right away across the church.
Sure, sure. And that's because of Satan. I mean, what Satan, he's out to undermine, to thwart the work of the gospel and the spread of the gospel. And so he's going to undermine it at its very heart and core. And that includes, other understandings of who Jesus is. Okay. Because that's what it comes down to. Jesus asked that of his disciples. Who do people say that I am? Another prophet? Okay. Well, a lot of religions will embrace Jesus as another prophet. Even Islam will do that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But no, the confession that Peter gives is, again, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And the understanding of Son of the living God there from biblical theology is the divine deity.
Mm-hmm. Now, other than what Jesus says, I guess you can look at perhaps what he does. Can you compare the attributes attributed to him with the attributes of the Father and the Spirit? And if they sync up, is that another test, so to speak, of the divinity?
To some degree, but in terms of the attributes of deity, yes. That will be the case, because
right.
There are attributes of Jesus where he is all-knowing. Okay, he is all powerful. He has power over creation, and so forth. We see that in the calming of the sea, and that those are attributes of deity, and we could go through a whole checklist on those that would further confirm again part of the cumulative evidence of this. But then, of course, there are some attributes of the Father that are not shared by the Son because of what we'd call the distinction of persons. Okay, so for example, the Father does not have flesh, but Jesus has flesh. The Spirit does not have flesh, but Jesus bears flesh. Yeah. So, you know, there are some distinctions as well.
You say that it brings to memory your colleague, Dr. Jeff Gibbs, who says we tend as Christians to sort of skip over the bodily resurrection. And
right.
I like what he says about, you know, why is this bodily resurrection important? Well, Jesus has one.
Yes, that's right.
It's got to be something important about it.
Uh-huh, yes. Yeah.
We
yes.
We take so much of these things for... As you teach the young men and some of the young women who come to this campus to train for service in the church, how well prepared are they in just basic Lutheran theology when they get here? Are they pretty well...
That varies.
Yeah.
It depends. We find that some of them are very, very strong, grounded in Lutheran theology. Many of them grew up Lutherans and were catechized that way. For example, this year in our graduating class, I believe it was over a third of our regular pastoral candidates, MDiv candidates, were actually pastors' kids.
Oh, really?
PKs.
Wow.
You know, so that says a lot about their upbringing, and typically they are very well grounded in Lutheran theology. But we do also have a number who, right now I'm teaching a class, and when I got to know a number of the guys, I bet three or four of them have been Lutherans only for a couple of years.
Really?
Okay, yeah. So they're still growing in their understanding of Lutheran faith. What they bring, though, is a deep appreciation for the Lutheran faith, because, in a sense, understand this correctly, they've chosen to be Lutherans.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I grew up in a Lutheran household, and blessedly so. I'm so thankful for that. But in a sense, I did not, you know, this was just given to me. This was formed in me from the start. But they've chosen it, so they are passionate about the Lutheran
faith. It's not the first
faith.
Time I've heard reference made to some of the best, at least LCMS Lutherans are converts.
Right.
Well, they've
right.
been through the meat grinder of theology.
Sure.
And
sure.
And well, yeah. one fellow who I attend service with at Ascension was talking about how he sort of came out of this Baptist-costal background,
mm-hmm.
and the freedom that you get when you finally understand what grace is really all about.
Amen.
You know, and
yes.
they bite onto that like a bass on a, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It's
right, right. And so they have what Dr. C.F.W. Walther calls have gone through the school of experience that causes them to be even more effective pastors and preachers because of that.
Yeah. Right. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Don't mean to cut you short for a moment there, Pastor, but we want to get to the phones because John, the fellow who I was talking about, is on the line. Good morning, John. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning, Rowan. Good morning, Doctor.
I hope you caught the answer to some of your question. I hope I got most of what you wanted in there.
Yes, you did, and that's basically what I was calling to thank you both, considering the questions that I did have. It's always a pleasure to you know, listen to the show when you guys can come up with those kind of answers for me. I think the biggest hurdle that I have, and it's more of a comment than a question, Doctor, I apologize. This is more of a the difference of getting Jehovah's Witnesses over the hurdle of the divinity is the big issue that I seem to, you know, usually when our course of discussions, they just can't, they have a very, very hard time getting that part of the gospel together with it. The other thing too is their whole concept of the salvation, as you said, when you get the concept of the deity incorrect, you get the entire gospel wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, I have a, it seems as if I have a very difficult time with their understanding of salvation. Mm-hmm. That you know, how salvation is there for them, and that seems to be the main issue. If we can get them over that hurdle, I think we've accomplished something.
Sure. Right. Well, and you're exactly right that the issue is not only their understanding of who Jesus is, but their understanding of how one is made right with God.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it interesting? I mean, this is oftentimes the case with error and heresy and the devil's work, that their understanding of salvation is by works. Okay,
yeah.
It's essentially you keep the commandments of God and you be a good witness for God and God will approve of you. And of course you can't make it to the 144,000 because all of those slots are already filled.
Sure.
But at least you can make it to the second level.
Yeah.
And but it's up to you to earn that ability.
Right.
Having said that, though, I want to encourage you to continue to show love to this family member.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, because that's the only way in which you're going to continue to have a hearing in, through which the Holy Spirit can work saving faith in that person.
Right, and thank you so much. I mean, it's, you know, that's the thing that, you know, if you discuss with them, you know, having a personal relationship with Jesus, that is something that just, that totally blows them away.
Mm-hmm.
Why would that blow them away, John? I'm curious.
Well, because, see, Rowan, from what I understand, and like I say, I don't go to the Kingdom Hall or anything of that nature. I will not do that. But one of the things that they do not have, that, first of all, they do not really give what they call obeisance. They don't consider, they actually don't even pray through Jesus, to Jesus. They don't have that personal salvation or that personal relationship with Him, basically because they feel as if they have to do something, works. That's how they get their blessings. And that just having a personal relationship is beyond them. They can't fathom that. I don't understand the exact reason why. They seem to immediately point to what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be a big thing for them.
Well, I might also comment here, their understanding of God, of Jehovah, is one in which he is very, what I'd call, transcendent, very distant. And so this whole idea, as you would put it, as a, of a personal relationship, or as we would say of you know, this close relationship of faith, where Jesus says we can come to the Father and address him as Abba Father, or as Luther says, we can come to God as dear children approach their dear Father. And Paul says we can do so boldly and confidently. That reflects that kind of sense of a close, intimate, personal relationship with a person who loves us dearly. Not just some transcendent, all-powerful being out there that we must do obedience to.
Right.
So,
One of the things, too, that I can't stress enough, and you guys have always put that forth, if they do come knocking on your door, you know, or stepping up on your porch, that is, to me, it used to be they got a door slam in the face. but I discovered, you know, through trying to grow in fellowship and trying to, you know, actually maybe become more mature in the Word and learning of the Word, that is a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful time to try to reach out to them and actually show them and point them to the way of Jesus. And that, you know, it's a perfect opportunity. You know, sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't. But if you create doubt in their minds, you know, concerning what they're trying to tell you and show them different according to the Scripture itself, you know, it's in there. You know, the Word of God is never void.
And my experience is that they've been trained with pretty much one set outline or agenda.
Yes.
But if you kind of can get them off that agenda, that outline, they are a bit lost.
Very
and,
much so.
And so by getting them, you know, into the Scripture and talking it through, oftentimes you find that they are much more vulnerable in terms of their convictions regarding the Jehovah's Witnesses tenets.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So. Well, I apologize. I've taken up enough of you guys.
No, we enjoy hearing from you, John.
Sure.
Thank you.
And,
yeah.
And again, I sure do appreciate, you know, KFUO. And, you know, I cannot say enough for the program and the message that you folks pass along, too. So thank you again, Roland.
Thank you, John.
Doctor, have a great day.
You're a big part of it. You're the one that started the conversation today, so thank you for the email.
I like to be known for starting something.
Hang on a second. Go ahead.
Permit me just to add one other thing that hopefully will give you hope, additional hope in your conversations with your family member who is a Jehovah's mm-hmm. Witness.
Yeah.
I recently read a book. It was just published in 2011 by George Barna, and in that he analyzes, you know, the whole scenario of culture and religious practice in our society today. But what one thing that I found that was very interesting is that Jehovah's Witnesses have a very high percentage of dropouts from their faith. In fact, I think it's the highest of any faith group or denomination. So that does show that it's not a lasting faith, oftentimes, that they have with their Jehovah's Witnesses approach here, that there is hope that they will see their error and come to true faith.
Thank you so much for those words of encouragement, and again, you guys have a wonderful day.
Thanks, you also,
John. Thank you.
See you.
You know, the other thing that I note is I have many conversations with my good friend Art Vanek, who's researcher and writer about Mormonism. When Mormons leave the Mormon Church, they tend to leave faith altogether. They become almost radical atheists. Mm-hmm. And I've heard similar things about Jehovah's Witnesses as well.
Right, right.
That they're just so, you know,
burned out
and abused by what they've experienced in that church. They just can't take any more of any kind of religion.
Exactly.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Well, that covers it for the divinity of Christ. We'll move on to some other things. You mentioned Satan a moment ago.
Okay.
I have an email about that as well. We'll talk about that when we get back right after this break. Stick around as the pastor returns in just a moment.
One of the core values of Concordia Seminary is faithfulness. Faithfulness to the Bible and the confessions of our church. Many people in America no longer believe that there is absolute truth. They say, you have your opinion, I have mine. All roads lead to heaven. But God has revealed truth. And we teach so that Concordia Seminary graduates will find winsome ways to present the truth.
Thank you for listening to KFUO Radio. You listen to us, and we want to hear from you. That's why we have our listener comment line at 314-505-7839. Maybe you have a comment about our programming.
I very much appreciate your ministry. You just really have a feel for the audience. I just want to compliment, thank you, and let you know I thank God for you.
Call the comment line at 314-505-7839 and let us know about something you like or maybe didn't like on KFUO.
I hope you don't have any more of this Mooney Crooney Ben at the Moon Contemporary Worship.
Remember, you're always welcome to call our live programs, but we realize that many of you may be listening to one of our on-demand podcasts and you can't call in. So call the comment line at 314-505-7839. Leave a comment for a program or a comment about KFUO in general.
I just really appreciate your program. Blessings to you and yours.
The KFUO comment line. Lutheran Association for Special Education has been providing caring Christian learning environment for children in the St. Louis area for more than 55 years. Throughout the years, they've served children from elementary through high school in 15 Lutheran schools in the St. Louis and St. Charles area. Their highly trained and accredited in-school educators provide a range of services from speech-language therapy, individual instruction, to modified curriculums and one-on-one tutoring. To find out more and how you can help your child, go to LutheranSpecialEd.org.
The Supreme Court won't get involved for now in a fight over whether a 29-foot war memorial cross can remain on public land overlooking San Diego. The ACLU's David Loy says the justices refused to review an appeals court ruling that deemed the Mount Soledad cross an unconstitutional mixing of government and religion.
The case now goes back to the district court for the government to propose a remedy, and we will evaluate whether that remedy is constitutional or not.
Hiram Sasser of Liberty Institute, the legal group representing the Mount Soledad Memorial Association, says the government could propose making additions to the war memorial instead of removing the cross.
We're disappointed that the court did not grant our petition, but we're very hopeful in light of the statement from Justice Alito that we're going to have a further opportunity to preserve this memorial.
Alito said a future appeal to the Supreme Court could be considered once the district court decides the cross's fate. I'm Steve Coleman.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Parents in the small Washington town of Onalaska are incensed, and they've got every right to be. Their fifth grade children were supposed to have a class on HIV/AIDS, but it turned into a very graphic description of oral sex by the principal teaching the class. One child said she was taught a boy was basically like a candy lollipop. Superintendent Scott Fenter defended the principal's action, saying, "You can't answer questions about STDs without being graphic. To put it diplomatically, the man is ignorant. I could have easily answered the child's questions without crossing the line and traumatizing them. The parents are justified to be angry, and they need to make sure this principal and superintendent are unemployed. It'll only get worse if parents stay on the sidelines. Fight for your children."
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Good morning. Welcome back. It's the Ask the Pastor Hour here on KFUO Radio. Professor David Peter, Dr. David Peter, serves at Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. And what kind of a course load are you picking up this fall?
I've got a pretty heavy course load this summer. I'm teaching three different courses.
Really?
And, in fact,
now,
just came right over from a preaching class, HOM 1, Homiletics 1.
How did David Lewis manage to snag a sweet sabbatical during all this? Are you doing extra work for him? Is that the deal?
No. I did have a sabbatical, and that's why I haven't been around for some time.
Okay.
It was kind of a partial sabbatical because I still had to do – I actually taught a course in the winter quarter and have had some administrative duties continuing on, but during the spring quarter, I didn't.
So teach. I get the sabbatical thing. It's like working for KFUO. If you want to take a couple of days off, you got to do all the work ahead of time.
Right, exactly.
So you can take a couple of days off.
That's the way it goes.
Okay, sure. So we share something in common here, academics and radio guys. Hey, I mentioned the Mark of the Beast, 666. Mm-hmm. And someone had called. I won't mention the name, but it was a voicemail that I received. And the woman called and was concerned that she was seeking more information about the Mark of the Beast, 666, said she was having trouble locating it in Scripture and was wondering what it was all about. And this is the stuff of Hollywood horror and, you know, Pentecostal hypertension with the whole Left Behind business. Sure. Even if, you know, it must have been 20 years ago, I remember, was a woman out Kansas way who just became apoplectic and inconsolable because the phone company issued her a number with 666 in it. Yeah, and right. she literally thought it was the end of the world for her. She'd been marked with the beast. Yeah. So from where do we get this 666 business?
Sure. Yeah, I remember you talking about 20 years ago. This goes back to, I think I was probably even high school. This was in the 70s. But there was this movie, The Omen.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you remember
The
Damien. Omen.
Yeah, that
Damien.
Evil little child.
He was the Antichrist. And if you just parted his hair, you know, a certain way, it's not like Harry Potter with the lightning bolt, but you could see the 666 on his scalp there.
Yeah.
So, there's been all kinds of folly and fancy that's accompanied this particular item. Where it's located is in Revelation chapter 13, the very end of the chapter. Revelation chapter 13, verse 18, it says, "This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Okay? To interpret this particular passage here, really you need to understand how to interpret the book of Revelation. And there's perhaps no more challenging book of the Bible for interpretation than the book of Revelation. But
a lot of relation back to Exodus, I've noticed, as we've been going through that study.
Oh, well, yes. And that's it. There's symbolism everywhere. And in chapter 1 of Revelation, it tells us that this was communicated by symbols. And so what we have to do is we need to understand all of these images and figures and so forth are symbols. And the key is usually found in the Old Testament. Okay? So, like you were saying here in Exodus, when you find a symbol, go back to the Old Testament, you'll find its meaning. For example, earlier in the book of Revelation chapter 11, it talks about two witnesses. Well, a lot of people are asking, who are these two witnesses? They take it literally. I think it's a symbol, because in the Old Testament, a very well-known passage in Deuteronomy supported elsewhere says that a witness is not to be considered valid and true unless it is by two or more witnesses. And so essentially what this is speaking about, the two witnesses represent the witness of the world, or witness of Christianity that goes throughout the world that is true and valid. Okay? It's not literally two people. So now when we get to this passage in Revelation chapter 13, it's numbers. And numbers are used symbolically throughout the book of Revelation as well. I can go into the explanation, but of each of them, for example, the number 3 symbolizes God. Makes sense. Trinity.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. The number 4 represents the world. Okay, so because they conceived the four corners of the earth, the four directions, the four winds, it's the world and so forth. When you get to 6 is the number of man. And why is this? Because man was created on the sixth day. Okay, and also 7 is the number of perfection. And so man, sinful man, now falls short of the glory, the perfection of God. So 6 is the number of man. And we could go on. I mean, the next chapter has 144,000. That's got symbolism in it as well. what I think is being conveyed in this symbolism of 666. Now, some people will do some calculations, and I think you can do valid calculations because the numbers corresponded to letters in the ancient alphabets, and they would see the name Nero, who was the Roman emperor who persecuted, really the first one to persecute Christians. And so they see his name in this. And that could possibly be. But I think an interpretation that is more consistent with the way that the book of Revelation uses numbers and symbolism here is this. The number 666. Six is the number for man, and there are three of them. Three is the number for God. And so this beast is the man who claims to be God, okay? Who takes upon himself the privileges and the authority of God, and that's the Antichrist, okay? In the time of that this was written, that was clearly the Roman emperor, who at that time was Domitian, required people when he entered the room. Everyone stood and said, "My Lord and my God." Okay, he was God. And the Christians, the reason why they are being persecuted at this time is that they are not honoring the emperor as God. In fact, they were made yearly to go and to say a prayer and offer up a sacrifice, a pinch of incense and so forth to him. And if they wouldn't, then you were marked as a Christian. And I think that's what's being symbolized by the mark of the beast, is those who are identified as Christians now are persecuted, and those then who have the mark of the beast are those who are worshiping the emperor, who are submitting to the worldly and idolatrous ethos. So that's kind of the way that I would interpret this, rather
than...
So
it's not the microchips like my dog has, or
yeah,
some kind
right.
of tattooed barcode or something like this.
Exactly, exactly.
So is this going to be a literal occurrence, this mark of the beast, that is on the hand, the forehead, what is it, the forehead and the hands of some?
No. Again, it's symbolic.
All symbolic.
And whether it's the mark of the Lamb, which the book of Revelation has, which we would understand essentially as baptism, and then faithful confession of the faith, that marks us as being followers of the Lamb, or the mark of the beast, which is those who will ascribe to the worldly system and will deny Christ in order to follow that worldly system. That's the difference there.
See, listen to me. Satan sparked some phone calls here. Have you noticed that? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Before we get to that, just real quick, did you notice that Elaine Pagels is back on the scene with a new commentary on Revelation?
No, I haven't.
It's not John the Apostle, it's John of Patmos, and
okay.
He's lamenting the destruction of Jerusalem, and he's trying to pick up the pieces of a broken faith. And don't you ever get tired of this stuff?
Yes,
I know. And you know, NPR put her on and gave her an hour of time, I guess, about a month or so ago. And, you know, itching ears, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones and talk with Herman. Good morning. You're up first, Herman. Thanks for the call.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for mentioning about Elaine Pagels. My question is somewhat along this line. Dr. Peters, in the world today, in terms of those who practice what's considered academic or formal endeavors of biblical scholarship, how would you say the position holds? Is it gaining, holding, or losing ground among them that Jesus Christ made a factual event of dying on the cross for a vicarious atonement and physically, literally rose from the dead, claiming he is who he said he is, as the Son of God and true man? Is this, in terms of just like with Elaine Pagels and others and Bart Ehrman's and the Jesus Seminar, where in the academic theological world is the position on Jesus' identity and physical resurrection going?
Okay, that's a very, very insightful question, and I would have to answer from my observation, it's all over the map. And you have some highly respected scholars, I should say, are highly influential scholars like Bart Ehrman, Elaine Pagels, and others, who take a very, very skeptical and radical approach to the historic interpretation of the New Testament, and essentially deny that there's anything distinctively unique about the Christian faith. In fact, that it's just Orthodox Christianity prevails today primarily because it won the political struggles of the early centuries of the church. That's essentially their position. But then you've got some very, very fine and highly respected scholars who take a very, very orthodox approach. For example, N.T. Wright out of England is one who has, I think, very eruditely defended the historic Christian faith. He's not Lutheran, so in not every area will we have complete agreement with him, but by and large, I think he's a very, very fine spokesman for the Orthodox faith. But in terms of trends, I think you're just going to continue to have divergence here. And the problem is that many who are of the skeptical or critical bent just automatically dismiss scholars who take a more orthodox view of Jesus Christ, who he is, what he did, his atoning sacrifice, and so forth. They just say, well, you know, they dismiss him outright being in error. I have colleagues, see, I don't teach in the Bible department. I have taught a couple classes, but regularly I don't teach. But my colleagues who do go to a national conference called the Society of Biblical Literature. And one phenomenon that they are describing, that they are observing about this, and this is the gathering of biblical scholars, usually right before Thanksgiving, is that it's becoming more and more dominated by conservative interpreters of the scriptures. And I think that's a good sign, okay? And in fact, many of the old guard, who are much more critical and liberal, are very concerned about that. Most of the biblical scholars now are more conservative. And the question is, well, why is that the case? I think there's, in many ways, a very pragmatic reason. Because the universities and so forth that used to hire the skeptical scholars are cutting that from their budgets. Okay, they don't regard religion or the Bible to be valuable anymore, so they're cutting out these liberal scholars. Now, you still have some like Ehrman and Pagels and so forth who are teaching places, but in the big picture, that's the case, whereas the more conservative schools still value biblical scholarship, and so those are the becoming more and more percentage-wise with scholars who are attending that gathering. I don't know if that answered your question at all.
Yes, that's given a lot of up-to-date insight there. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Ehrman. Good to hear from you. Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of Elaine Pagels and Ehrman mentioned the Jesus Seminar, are you familiar with the name Paul Verhoeven?
No.
Paul Verhoeven is a Hollywood director, has done some Schwarzenegger films and done some other things. Hmm. Well, he's one of the few lay members of the Jesus Seminar.
Hmm.
And did you know he's coming out with a film this summer?
Oh, no.
Now, here's just a little bit. This is him in his own words talking about what this film is going to be about.
Well, he reduced it basically to 2 hours of suffering, isn't it? According to the dogma of the church, basically, that the suffering of Jesus frees us from every sin, kind of, isn't it? And that's, first of all, in my opinion, completely not true. Secondary, basically, Jesus is not about the suffering of Jesus, is not the important thing. I mean, it's terrible, but many people have terrible endings, isn't it? And even with sicknesses that are so horrifying that basically a crucifixion that took about 6 hours is perhaps, let's say, not even that important in comparison to what people have to go through, isn't it? Especially if they're wounded, lose limbs, whatever. Terrible things happen in the world. And I think that's not the essence. That's horrible. The world is full of violence and terrible things. The whole universe is filled with disaster, I think.
So the suffering on the cross was nothing compared to getting your legs blown off in combat, and all this sort of thing. He's actually coming out with, I won't mention the name, but he's coming out with a film this summer that basically is Jesus seminar propaganda.
Mm.
The real Jesus.
Okay.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware.
You're just smiling
that.
As that played in the background.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the more things change, the more they stay the same. It just keeps coming. And we had Dan Brown, and now we have this. So the devil, he's just going to be relentless in terms of his barrage of attacks against Orthodox faith.
When Verhoeven takes that point of view, those presuppositions, and packages them in a very attractive Hollywood production,
sure. It
just because of the size and the scope and the appearance of it, it's going to lend it some kind of credibility.
Yes, indeed.
Sadly,
many are going to fall for it and are going to be convinced by what he has to say, regrettably, that's where so much of our society lives now, is just at the popular media level, and the popular media is what influences what they believe and how they behave. It's a sad, sad commentary on our society.
Let's grab another phone call, and then maybe when we come back after talking with Larry here for a moment, tell me if you think that the average pastor in the pulpit can compete with that kind of a message coming out of Hollywood. Larry, good morning. You're up next.
Good morning there, Roland. I got in late, and I listened to the segment about 666, and I would like to add some insight into the discussion. Who is the pastor, or is it a professor?
Professor David Peter. He's also a pastor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Imagine
okay.
that on Concordia Seminary's campus, a pastor and a professor in one. It's like Satan sinner at the same time in a lot of ways.
Okay. You know, if you look at 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 4, it says, "Who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he is God, sitting in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." I'd like to make a couple points and then like you to comment. First of all, the word anti in the Latin has a twofold meaning. It means in place of or against. And in the context of 666, if you look at writings, and I've read all of the ones I'm going to mention, the Lutheran Confessions, Sigmund Becker's book, probably the best and least known, is a book called The Judge at the Door by a man named Peters. The book for probably the most brevity is Kretzmann. I think it's the most simple and easy to understand, and it's very short. Newer commentary by Reverend Goosewine called Commentary on Revelation. And then Martin Franzmann's book. But if you look at the walking stick of the Pope, then it's inscribed on the stick itself, Vicarius Fiae Dei. And if you do the Roman numerals out, it comes to 666. As a staunch Lutheran, I look at works righteousness as a damnable teaching, and I would hope you agree there, Pastor.
Oh, certainly, yes.
Okay, so what we have here is a system of works, and a person who sets himself up as another Christ here on earth. And if you look at the publishing from 1895 of the Roman Catholic National, they ask the very question, what place does the Pope hold here on earth? And the answer is, he is not only Jesus Christ in the flesh. He is God of God, King of kings, Lord of lords. That's their response. I would hope that a good portion of whom Catholics don't believe that, but that is the, that is an official publication that I have in studying Revelation. There's no other way around it, that 666 is a works righteous number, and it's the word anti in the Latin, definitely in place of, fits the bill, just like our Lutheran confessions have taught going way back. So I'd like your comment.
Thanks, Larry. Good to hear from you today.
Yes, you're obviously very, very well read and a fine, maybe lay theologian. Perhaps you're a pastoral theologian, but very impressive your insights there. Certainly, our Lutheran confessions have identified the references in the scriptures to the Antichrist with the office of the papacy, particularly as the reformers engaged with the papacy, and some of the characteristics there in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 of the one who puts himself in the authority of God and so forth, especially in the 16th century, that was very evident that that was applicable. I think when we're talking about the Antichrist, and I affirm very much what you were saying there, that anti does not just mean against, but instead of, okay, a substitute for. And that's essentially what was happening with the papacy in the time of Luther and the reformers and confessors and so forth. They were putting the Pope was putting himself up as a substitute, one mediator for us other than the one Jesus Christ. And some of that continues even to today. So we traditionally have understood the office of the Antichrist as being more of an ethos or essence, and it can take place and manifest itself in a political context, such as in the first century with the Roman emperors claiming to be God. It can be in an ecclesial context, such as the papacy claiming to hold certain prerogatives and authority that can only be God's, such as the authority to bring life or damnation. That's something that's claimed by the papacy. So we have to always be attentive to that. Whatever the manifestation of Antichrist is in our society, and the devil is very clever, and he will find many ways to make that manifestation existing in any given society. So we have to be on the watch for that.
We have about a half a minute left, and before we took Larry's call, the question was, like with the Verhoeven's film or these other things that are out there, how well equipped are pastors, Lutheran pastors, to contend against things like Hollywood productions and the like?
Yeah. Well, that's why we have to be aware of this, and we always have to be ready to give a defense of the hope that is within us so that our people are able to do that as well. And I think it's appropriate for pastors from the pulpit and in their teaching to respond to these kinds of threats and equip the people to respond in a way that is faithful and hopeful.
So with a film like Verhoeven's film that supports the Jesus Seminar point of view, go see it.
Right.
Not to support it, but to argue against it.
Right.
You know, don't shy away from these things.
Right.
You know, here I stand.
Yes.
Professor David Peter, Pastor Peter, thanks so much. Appreciate your time today.
It's my joy. It's good to be back.
We'll see you again soon. All right, guys, that's it for today. Moments of Assurance with Mark Hawkinson after the news.
Listen to the Bible study Monday through Friday at this same time. The Bible study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is heard weekdays on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
This is a test of the emergency alert system.
After the Babylonian captivity, the people of God returned to Israel and began to rebuild the temple. In fact, that's the Sunday school lesson for this coming Sunday, which on the next broadcast, Pastor Mark Smith and I will be talking about. But what has building the temple got to do with your faith in Christ Jesus?
1 o'clock, Monday through Friday.
On KFUO Radio.
Start your day off right with the morning show, Monday through Friday on KFUO Radio. Hi, I'm Randy Asbury. Join me as we start the day right with daily prayer, news and views from around the church, feeding the faith, and much more. The morning show, 7 to 9 a.m., Monday through Friday, right here on your Lutheran radio station, AM 850 KFUO or KFUO.org.
We are where you are. KFUO Radio, Clayton, St. Louis. KFUO HD, streaming live at KFUO.org. AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Feel a little uneasy about the economy? Many of us do. Consumer confidence is down, says Lynn Franco of the Conference Board, which collects this information.
It just seems like we're sort of mired in this slow growth environment. And while we had been expecting a pickup in the second half of the year, it's becoming, I think, a little bit less likely of a scenario now.
At least our homes are worth more. Home prices are up in the big cities, according to the Case-Shiller Index, up 1.3%. That's the first increase in 7 months.
San Francisco, Washington, and Phoenix posted the biggest increases, while prices dove 3.6% in Detroit, the only city to record a drop. The increases partly reflect the impact of the spring buying season, and the month-to-month prices aren't adjusted for seasonal factors. Still, prices in half of the cities are up over the past 12 months. Matt Small, Washington.
We now have the tapes of a police interview with Matt Sandusky, Jerry Sandusky's adopted son. You'll remember he claimed Sandusky sexually abused him when he was 8 years old.
With, like, the showering, with the hugging, with the rubbing, with the just the talking to me, the way he spoke.
NBC News obtained the tapes and aired them on the Today Show. Jerry Sandusky has been convicted of sexually abusing 10 boys. He has not been charged with abusing Matt Sandusky. Hackers who've been dealing in stolen credit card numbers and bank information have been busted in New York City and around the world, according to authorities. They are calling this a major international sting. They say that the bad guys were exchanging the numbers with each other over the Internet. The authorities are not saying much more than that right now. Rielle Hunter says she and former presidential candidate John Edwards have ended their relationship. Hunter says she and Edwards were a couple up until late last week, as details from her memoir became public. This is AP Radio News.